Hey, good morning, guys. My name is Jacob. I work for Microsoft. You can find more about me on my blog, jj09.net. This is my personal blog, but I blog about stuff I'm doing at work and stuff I'm doing at night. Like recently, I was doing a little bit with Xamarin. I live in Seattle in the United States, and if you ever have a chance to visit, I strongly recommend you to take a few days and explore the area. Last week I was at Mount Rainier. It's 4,000 meters or 14,000 feet high, one of the highest mountains in the United States. It was pretty cool. I'm also biking a lot, so I'm very happy to visit Amsterdam because this is like the best city designed for cyclists. In Seattle, we are getting there slowly, but we have a lot of off-city bike trails, so it's pretty cool there. I also swim, I also run, and I'm doing triathlons. And I encourage everybody to do this because then you can have like full set of fitness for your body, and especially if you're a developer, you sit 10, 12 hours per day. You know, it's harsh. Okay, let's talk about Azure. So this is the Azure coast in France. It's pretty cool. I think that's where the name Azure is coming from. And this is the Ibiza Island in Spain. And I work on the project codenamed Ibiza. And this is the Azure portal. So maybe let's take a look about a few things on the Azure portal. Let's see how fast it will load. That will be interesting. If you have never used it out of the United States. But we are geo-replicating around all data centers around the world. So we should have a similar performance here. All right. Cool, you're there. It will take a little bit of time because I have a lot of stuff on my dashboard. So more stuff you have pinned to your dashboard, the longer your startup time would be, because you know every of these tiles pinned here, they're doing separate requests to get the data to display there. Like here, I'm getting some statistics on my blog. Here, I'm getting some statistics on my other website. Here, different one. Here, some billing stuff, so on and so forth. Did you guys know that you can change the themes if you double click on the dashboard? So like, nothing happening. Oh yeah, because I didn't turn off presentation. Thanks for letting me know. What I need to do? Boom. Okay, now? All right, cool. All right, thank you. Yeah, so if I double click, you can change the themes. You have blue, you have dark blue, you have light, but I'm a big fan of dark. Another thing we recently introduced is the dashboards. So like if you click here, you can create a new dashboard. Like for example, here I have a different dashboard created for my blog. So I have only tiles related to my blog. And you can share the dashboard. So for example, if you work on the project with your friends, you can click share, and then they can edit the dashboard and share the updates with you. So you know, many people can contribute and configure it and make it beautiful. So let me go back to my main dashboard. Another thing that not many people probably know, oh yeah, probably know you can collapse this, right? I usually do that. We have a keyboard shortcut. So if you click a question mark, here on the right-hand side, you have a legend of different shortcuts you can use. And let me run Karnak. It's the app that will be showing like what keys I'm pressing. So if I press question mark, the legend shows up. And my favorite shortcut is G plus A. It opens all resources. It's faster for me to click this than using my mouse and clicking there. Cool thing is also like if you click D, it will go back to dashboard, or if you click slash, it will focus on search, and then I can search, for example, for my blog. I can click enter, and I'm here. I think this is cool stuff because at the beginning we didn't have much keyboard support. Now we can use Portal pretty comfortable with keyboard. So you have shortcuts, you have also a good focus management. And recently I also started a quick YouTube series. If you go to aka.ms/AzurePortal, no, Azure tips and tricks. Okay, let me turn off Karnak because it's sort of getting on my way. Yep. So I didn't put this address, so that's not feedback, that's tips and tricks. So that's the site. Yeah, come on. Tips and tricks. And disappear. So here I did a series of short videos about some features you might not be aware of, like, for example, changing themes, customizing dashboard, organizing blades, or like even app service plan explained, because we changed it. Now there is app service plan, which is web apps, which is mobile apps, so on and so forth. So I encourage you guys to check it out. But you're probably more interested here to you're more interested to hear how this is built. So so this is basically what the Azure portal is. We are exposing the complex Azure backend for you in a nice UI, where you don't have to know much of details about how the lot of stuff is built there. So my team is responsible for doing the front end, because the Azure APIs are all public. So we basically glue the UI with the public APIs. And a few quick facts. We have over 500 developers working on the front end only, because we have almost 100 services on the portal already, services such as web apps or virtual machines or storage, so on and so forth. We have more than 2,000 blades. Blade is, you guys know, it's like sort of like a view on a standard website. So it's pretty big. And the reason why we created the new portal was the scale, because with the old portal we had one monolithic front end. We had, you know, separate APIs, a lot of APIs created by different teams, but then the front end was deployed at one time. So for example, if, you know, web apps has to do some update, they have to wait for every other team to sort of sync and make sure everything works, and then they could deploy. So with the new portal, we did it really different. So now the model is, we have a website, the core of the portal, and we also expose the framework. And the framework talks to website, and on top of this framework, the services are built. And the services are running in separate iframes. So for example, web app is running in separate iframe, and it talks to the website through the framework. And the same with virtual machines or SQL. And what is interesting here, that these iframes run only JavaScript. There is no presentation layer there. They just run JavaScript, and they communicate the framework. For example, open blade, and this is the URL to the template of the blade. And then framework is parsing all these messages. So main reason why we did it this way, because now every service can deploy whenever they want. They just have to use no more than 3 months old version of the framework. And they can deploy even every hour if they want. We don't care. We also can deploy every hour. We don't care. It's independent. So this gives us scalability, because it will be impossible probably to develop anything when you have almost like 100 different teams working together. So this is a little bit low level view how it works. So we have a portal. We have this hidden iframe with this JavaScript that talks to the actual, we call it extensions, features, it's extensions. It talks to their web server, because they deploy on their web server. They just provide the URL for us, like you can see on extensions config here on the left bottom. And then we load this extension, and it tell us about the metadata, about what to display, about their create capabilities, about some eventual tiles that should be pinned to dashboard, so on and so forth. So this is like a very, very high level how this is built. And a little bit about technologies we are using. So we are using TypeScript. Entire portal is built with TypeScript. We are also using Knockout.js, created by Steve Sanderson. And we are fortunate, because Steve was working with us for over 2 years. So every time when we needed some Knockout feature, it was really easy to convince him that we need it, and he was just adding it. We also use jQuery for some simple DOM manipulation. We use require.js for module management and async module loading. And we use D3 for charts. So all the beautiful charts you can see are based on D3. Of course, we build a layer on top to customize it to our needs. We use some HTML5 features such as local storage, so on. We use Less for CSS management because we have a lot of CSS there. So it helps us to minimize the amount of code. The generated code is still pretty large, but we have a little bit less to manage. For unit testing, we use QUnit and Sinon.js for mocking. Why QUnit? Because 3 years ago, or over 3 years ago, when we were starting this project, that was sort of the most popular choice. Today, probably we would go with something like Jasmine, which is a little bit more rich framework. But it's still good. You can do everything with QUnit as well. We use C# on our backend, and we are running ASP.NET MVC 5 to serve our web app. And we also have a Node.js server. And this is interesting because at some point we figure out that what the actual extension or the feature is doing, like for example, web apps, when a user is doing some action on the portal, for example, create web app, they need to call Active Directory to check some permissions. Then they need to call the billing API to check whether user have a credit to create a new web app. They didn't have to call the web app backend to request this resource. So there's like three requests going back and forth between your browser and Azure. So we think like, why we don't move this logic to the server? So like this logic that we having hidden iframes should run on the cloud, and the request will be much faster, right? And then just the result will be going back through the WebSockets to the actual portal. So we are sort of testing this. So if you can see sometimes on your URL, if you have feature.relex, that means, because we call it relocatable extensions, so that means that we are trying this feature on you, and so far it works pretty well. And we are still evolving it. For the unit testing, we use Visual Studio tests, and we use Selenium for our UI tests. It's a pretty good framework, but of course the problem with UI tests is they take time. The unit tests, it's a matter of milliseconds, while in the unit testing is seconds, like 30 to even 1 minute, sometimes even over 1 minute, because you need to load the entire app and do actions on it. And we use Mocky for quick mocking. And to give you a little bit idea what how much code is there, so you can see we have over 1 million of TypeScript lines. And this is only in the core of the portal, so this is without all the features that are built on top of that. The C#, this over 200,000, but most big part of it is just the UI tests. So we mostly write TypeScript. And you know, the JavaScript is, of course, compiled TypeScript. TypeScript helped us a lot in our case, because we are exposing APIs to our developers. But also, when we are doing change in such a big, complex code base, and then you, for example, rename a function, and then you find out, oh, it's used over there. I had no idea about that. But thanks TypeScript, he will let you know, because you'll get compilation failure. So if you're not familiar with TypeScript, I recommend you to check out on my YouTube channel. I did two talks last year about building apps with TypeScript. It's sort of like TypeScript 101. And another one is TDD with TypeScript, Angular, and Node. It's with Angular 1 and Node.js, how you can sort of transform your existing JavaScript apps to add TypeScript. It's not that hard. And also like how you write the tests, and how you don't have to write all kind of types of tests you would have to write with JavaScript. You don't have to do it with TypeScript. And also last year I reviewed the book Learning TypeScript. It's a pretty cool book. And if you want this, if you tweet me with hashtag TypeScript book, I can get you a free copy or some discount code. So let me know. All right, so challenges of building the portal, because that's the coolest thing about it. So the challenge number one is enable to 500 developers to work on one code base. So even though that the extensions and the teams are working sort of independently, still on the core team, we have something like 50 to 60 developers. So it's still a large amount. And you want to ensure, for example, that they all run the same version of the tooling, the same version of the framework, so on and so forth. And at Microsoft, we have a tool called CoreXT. It sort of sets your environmental variables and install NuGet packages with all the stuff you need. But for you, you probably want to try a solution like Vargon or Packer that enables you to create your development environments, and then you can share it with team and you make sure that you all run on the same versions, because you know sometimes for example, if you're using a different version of C# compiler, everything might work locally, right? Because you're using C# 6, you use some, or maybe even C# 7, because you get the last drop of Roslyn, like Bart yesterday, and you're compiling it, everything works, and then you push it to your repo, and it breaks, because on the repo you use C# 5. So I strongly recommend it to use some sort of tooling for that. And another thing is code reviews. So if you have many developers working on one code base, there is no way that somebody will know about everything, right? So in our team, we usually require to have like two people to check your code. Sometimes if you're like very confident in some area or there's like very small change, it's one person. And of course, sometimes it costs time, and sometimes when the code review is large, you're looking at it and you're thinking like, oh my God, like now I need to spend like whole day trying to understand that. But what I am usually doing in such a cases is like I'm just sitting down with the guy who sent out the code review, and I'm asking him, okay, like tell me like what did you do here, and like what hard decision have you made? Because usually when you do a big change, you have to make a few decisions that you're not very sure about, and that's like that's very hard in our job, that every day we have to make so many decisions. If you want to do it this way or that way, and you do like 100 different decisions, you get two decisions wrong, and then you know we end up with the zombie systems, right? So so it's not that bad. You can sit down, you can then chat, you can then you can understand also what the guy is doing, can provide some external input, and at the end I think it pays off a lot. We also use Git. We don't use TFS or Source Depot, and I really like Git, and I encourage all of you to switch to Git, especially because of the branching. You know, like I don't know how many of you have tried to branch in TFS. All right, one gentleman there. Okay, like probably most of you. I don't know how many of you like this experience. I didn't. In Git, it's just a matter of seconds, because Git works in differences. It doesn't create an entire copy of the repo. And if your repo is large, it just takes time and it's just painful. So strongly recommend Git. A lot of cool features there. And you can have multiple branches and switch between them pretty fast. We also have a continuous integration, of course. So we use Jenkins for this. So here's our continuous integration board. We have a whole bunch of tests, unit tests. We have UI tests, so on. And also, every week, we have one person who is called a Jenkins ambassador, because we didn't want to punish one person in the team to be always responsible for that and going after people and saying, hey, like you pushed something that possibly broke this. So we want like everybody in the rotation basis to do that. And then it pays off, because then they know that, you know, like today maybe I'm not the Jenkins representative, but some week I will be, and I wouldn't like, do this. I'll do some private run before I push my change to make sure that all tests pass. And if you break tests, that's what lands on your desk. And if you break the build, that's unfortunately my desk. So it happens to everybody, So a little bit about our release pipeline. So we have a dev branch where we push our code when the feature is ready, code review is done, we push it to dev branch. And then we have branch called dog food, which is like internal staging environment. And every time when we push something to dev branch and the continuous integration board is green after that, we merge from dev branch to dog food. So this is like our continuous integration, continuous delivery pipeline, and we deploy. And then everybody inside our team can already access the latest version. We also have another branch called MPAC, which stands for ms.portal.azure.com, which is for Microsoft employees and MVPs. So I'm sure some of you are MVPs, you probably use this. So you're the lucky guys who can do some testing for us, the features that other people cannot see yet or will never see. But we don't do it continuously. We merge roughly every Thursday. At some point, we try to do it automatically, like from dog food when everything was green, we were merging to MPAC. But now we do it every Thursday, and we do release every Thursday, and then we wait a few days to discover some possible regressions or some bugs, because of course it's not possible to have 100% of coverage. And every Tuesday we do the same with production branch. So we roughly every week we update your code base because we are doing it almost every day. With all of the features, but now we a little bit change that. Now every day we deploy like some small fixes, but when we do features, we don't want to add a new feature or do change almost like every day. So you get up, the portal is different, and you then before you go to bed, it already changed. So we want to give you like a week of stability there. All right, the challenge two, performance. So that's one of the biggest challenges. I don't know how many of you have a chance to use the portal at the beginning, but it was pretty slow. So you are working on that. And again, challenge here is that the number of our customers grow almost 200% every year. I think last year it was something like 170%. So we have more than double number of customers than the year before, and also the number of features and the services grows. When I was starting on the team 2 years ago, I think we had like 15 services maybe. Now we have almost 100, which is a little bit crazy. So a few lessons learned here. Of course, minify your JavaScript. That's something you should mention, but I'm still surprised that I'm going to some websites and they just don't care, but that's okay. Minify your CSS. Another thing is lazy load your JavaScript. So don't load all your JavaScripts at the beginning. Try to defer it as much as possible. The same with CSS. You don't have to load all your CSS. You can also load it dynamically. We did this also lately. And then bundle your JavaScripts to minimize the number of requests you're doing, because in HTTP, one protocol, you can only have up to 6 simultaneous connections to one server. So if you have, for example, 10 or 20 requests, you need to wait until the previous request will come back and then do another 6. The same with CSS, of course. And then cache as much JavaScript as you can on the client side. And in order to achieve that, you should use these three techniques: etags, cache control, and unique URLs. And why you need those three? So etag is like a checksum that when you request the resource in the server, you send the etag and the server is checking whether the file changed. If it not, it's just saying it didn't change, so it doesn't send you another entire file. Cache control is telling the browser, if you have this file and, for example, reuse it for next 7 days or a month, or I think the maximum value is like a year, then don't even request. If you have this file, just use this file. So that's the best scenario. And then you need to have unique URLs, because if you have cache control, let's say set to 30 days and you want to update something, it will not work, right? Because people still have cached resources. But then if you use unique URLs, it will do separate requests. So those three techniques combined give you the best experience. And of course, you can also cache JavaScript and CSS on the server side, especially if you are doing some dynamic bundling on there. And use CDNs for static resources, or like we changed this now because we are deploying to all Azure regions. CDNs didn't give us much of advantage because it's pretty much the same. So now we are just deploying to all Azure regions. But if you're not doing this, if you're deploying just to Europe or to US, you want to have as much resources as you can in the CDNs. Use gzip, and this is actually very, very important because like there is this website, gzip test or check gzip compression. So like, for example, I have my blog. It's hosted on Azure websites, and Azure websites allow you to do gzip. Whoa, it's not enabled? No way. I had it enabled. That has to be wrong. No, it was enabled yesterday. Did they turn it off? Yeah, it is. All right. All right, that was weird. I blame this website. Yeah, so you can see like here I am saving like 70% of the size. So if I didn't use gzip, I would have 67 kilobytes. Now I have only 20. So it gives you a pretty significant advantage here. If you have icons on your web app, which is most of the cases it's true now, then use SVGs for that because you can scale them. It's free to resize them. You don't have to take care about the particular size. And you can also bundle them, which is a good thing. That's what we are doing. I think one guy from my team got even a patent for that, for bundling SVGs and extracting them, because it saves it gives us a lot of performance gain. And also, which is very interesting, that if you use HTTPS, you can get advantage. And why is that? Is if you guys know Troy Hunt, he did a blog post about this, and I was very, very interested to read that. And so there is this site, HTTP versus HTTPS, and if you go there, you can see there is 360 unique non-cached images, and he's doing the request using HTTP. It takes almost 8 seconds, but if you use HTTPS, it takes less than 2, right? And this is like shady. It's, why is that, right? So you can go here, and you can see that here they are using HTTP, but in version 1, and they're comparing it against HTTPS in version 2. And you might ask, like, it doesn't make sense. Why you don't compare HTTP 1 and HTTPS 1 and or HTTP 2 with HTTPS 2? So the answer for that is, if you go to caniuse.com, and if you search for HTTPS, HTTP, so here you can see that almost all green browsers supporting it, but there is this annotation too in most of them, which means that they only support HTTP 2 over TLS, which means you'll only have HTTP 2 if you're using HTTPS. And with that, you can have more than 6 simultaneous requests to your backend. So this is it's pretty interesting. And you know, of course, use HTTPS because of security. And the last thing is, of course, writing performant JavaScript, things like caching variables. So for example, if you are reusing some nested variable a few times in your code base, wrap it. The same with functions, and try not to do dumb operations, but this is pretty hard because that's all what we do, right? Here I think I had one called sample unminified JS. Let me open this. So for example, here I'll copy this and I will look for minify JS. OK, Okay, JS compress. So I'll paste this. Okay, paste. So this is like a simple fake code where I have some object with a lot of nested properties. And here I have some switch statement that is using it, and then another two ifs that are using some properties of user settings, right? And now if I compress this, open this, and let me open Notepad, and paste this here, and you can see I have 344 bytes, okay? This is the best what the minifier could do. But if here I'll say var user settings equals, and I'll grab this, say user settings here, and I'll wrap it here, and I will change this here and change it here. Boom. I'll compress this. Copy this. So you remember we had 344. And now, after my extra wrapping, we have only 304. And this adds up over time, because this is a thing that the minifier cannot do, because they don't know where your object is being initiated. They just don't doing this. But you know that at the particular point in your code, whether your object is initiated or no. And actually, this also gives you a performance gain, because here I am just doing a lookup for this particular object once instead of three times to, you know, accessing my application, then properties, then general, then user settings, and then some particular properties of it. Okay, so let's go back to slides. So the question is whether TypeScript compiler will help with that. No, because this is TypeScript compiler compiles to JavaScript, and then you need minifier to minify your JavaScript code. But in this case, it cannot minify this, because the minifier doesn't know whether the object was initialized, right? So if it will try to minify or wrap this variable because before the object was minified, it might just gives you undefined reference. So this is something you have to do by yourself. And like recently, we are saving a lot of bytes using tricks like that. And at the end, if you care about performance, what you have to do, you just try different things. And that's what we are doing. We are trying different things. We have a lot of telemetry and metrics. We are checking whether does it work, did it help, it didn't, we revert, or we keep it, then try another things. And that's how it goes. I have also one demo. Not sure if I have enough time, but I will try my best. So hope you can guys see it. So I go to require.js demo. It's a very simple app here. I'll run HTTP server and go to website localhost 8080. I'll open my network for now. Maybe it's not important. So this it's a very simple sample website. I have like one button where I get a list of people. I have three people here, and then I click on video, and I load the video, and I can play the video. But what is interesting here is, let me open a new tab. Require not React. You guys fans of React.js and fans of React? Okay, four people. Okay, Aurelia.js. Great. So 50-50 React and Aurelia. I'm happy. I really like Aurelia. I decide that I will skip React, you know, because like you learn every framework every month, and then at some point you need to say stop, right? So when React came, I said stop. So this is this app. And so what it does is just have a click handler, and here I don't have these people in database, it's just in line. And then I'm using underscore.js to get the size, and then I'm using it to do a for each over people and append the list to the DOM. And then I attach another click handler to the video button. And once you click that, you add the video, and I'm using video.js player, because here you can see it's a nice player. Like if I click on this, it plays with standard HTML player. You don't have that. And this is just for demo purposes, to show you loading the different libraries. Because if I open network tab, and I do disable cache, and I click Control F5. You can see I'm getting a 1.1 megabyte here, and I'm loading the video.js, which is over 700 kilobytes, but I don't really need it at the beginning because I'm not playing video, right? Until I click this, I don't even, if you look at the code here, I don't even need underscore until I click on the get people. So what you can do, and because I'm running out of time, I'll just do git checkout 04CDN. So this is improved version of this using a few techniques I mentioned. So now if you go here, I'm using require.js. So if you see here in the HTML, I'm loading my require.js, and I'm specifying the link to the config file. So the config is here. And I'm also using CDN. So in require.js, you can specify the few links. This is the primary link that require.js is trying to get the resource. And if it fails, because CDN might be down, then I get it from a local server. And on the startup of the app, I am loading my app module, which is this app.js. And now here, I'm loading module only jQuery module at the beginning. And then after I click on get people, then I am loading underscore because I need underscore. And then I am loading video.js only after people will click on the video. So now I also have a gulp task here to minify CSS and minify JavaScript, because if you maybe notice here in my index, I'm using this directory. So I will compile it to this directory. So let me run gulp really quick, and this should minify my files. Okay, minify CSS, minify JS. Okay, 6 seconds. And now if I refresh that, you can see at the startup time, I have only 54 kilobytes instead of 1.1 megabyte. And you can see that here, I only loaded jQuery. Of course, I loaded my app.js and require.js and config because I needed that. And now if I click get people, it loads underscore. And if I click video, it loads the video.js and the actual video, so another kilobytes. So this is how we can optimize using minifications, using asynchronous module loading, and defer the loading as late as you can. And of course, now hipsters are moving from require.js to Webpack. This is a new module loader that's a little bit more powerful. It has a little bit more features. So I encourage you to check out both. All right, so challenge number three, regressions, right? So many times what happens in a large system, I don't want to touch this because I don't know what's going to happen if I change this line of code, right? You know, the word might explode, or I don't know. So we always, we never ship anything that doesn't have unit tests. And unit tests is not enough. You also need integration tests, because if you have unit tests but you don't have integration tests, that's what happens, right? So turns out that every piece is actually working, but that the high level it doesn't. Then you know, our integration test is basically UI tests. And what, as I mentioned before, a UI test can take like 30 seconds to 1 minute or even more, because you need to load the browser, you need to load the entire website, you need to do this click and wait until everything will load. Unit tests can run in a milliseconds. So what usually you should do, you should cover all possible scenarios in unit tests and then have like one high level UI test with the most common configuration that will capture that. And also, thanks to TypeScript, our first unit test is a TypeScript compilation. Because if you're using only JavaScript, you probably should have tests that are guarding your APIs. Whether you're calling some API.function, you probably should have unit tests saying that this is defined, because many times you can discovered only on production, that somebody is calling this function but it doesn't exist anymore and just silently fails somewhere in your console. Regarding browser support, of course we support all evergreen browsers, but we don't have full coverage on all possible browsers combinations. So we usually target the latest versions of Chrome, latest of Edge and the Firefox. And on Safari, we just support MacBooks, the latest version, because if like 1, maybe 2% of our users are using it. And regarding Internet Explorer, you might think that we are Microsoft, so we should support all of them, right? Well, no, we just support IE 11. And I think that's good enough, because if you're running like IE 6 and you are a DevOps for some company, that's probably not very secure, and that's probably something is not right, right? So I encourage you to like use at least IE 11 or the best Edge or Chrome to use the portal. Interesting thing that one time we tried to run the Azure portal in my friend's Tesla. And it was working, like it's super cool. Like if you kick off the deployment from the office, then you drive home, you can see whether it succeeded or failed, or you can like observe your alerts. It's pretty cool stuff. all right, so at the end, going back to the technologies we are using. These technologies were chosen over three years ago. So now, if I was involved in that, I would probably replace Knockout with Aurelia framework, which is a much high level and more rich front-end framework today. As I mentioned, Require is now being replaced by Webpack, which has more features and solve other problems that Require doesn't. The alternative for less is SAS. This doesn't really matter, it's just alternative, so I'm mentioning here because it's doing similar things. You can see like the battles over internet, like you know C# versus Java. This is like less versus SAS. For unit testing, I think we would definitely go with Jasmine, because Jasmine gives you end-to-end testing experience. It has mocking, it has nice assertion library, and now I think it's the most popular JavaScript testing framework. And of course, ASP.NET Core got released. It's faster. So we are looking to do the upgrade sometime, but we are not rushing towards it because it's not that much critical component for us. And also, the Visual Studio unit tests, they're okay. But the only thing that's annoying for me is if I am doing parameterized tests, so I want to run the same test but for different parameters, I need to create a separate method, and that's just annoying. So XUnit is a pretty cool framework. You can add parameters on top of the method, and I like the APIs even better, so it's pretty cool. And also MockQ was again created a long time ago. Now nSubstitute is, it has a little bit nicer API. So if you guys do mocking, go check out nSubstitute. You can use still mock you, but I think now nSubstitute is getting more and more popular. Like one more time, I want to mention about my short videos about the portal, aka.ms/azure-portal-tips-and-tricks. You can also go to my blog, jj09.net/youtube. And also, we want your feedback. So if you go to aka.ms/azure-portal-feedback, you can vote for different features. And actually, let me do it now. aka.ms/azure-portal-feedback. So you can see that the top requests are, here's the status. So you can see we started working on this. So top three, we are working on that. These are under review. A lot of people here are asking me to about when you guys will open source the UI so I can use it and build my own management experiences. So I'm always telling them, go here and vote for this feature. And what you can also mention, we can also notice And if you look here on the status, you can see that we already completed over 400 user requests. So whatever you put there, whatever you vote for it, we're really looking at this, and we are implementing it. You can also argue that, yeah, you guys rejected like 200 other requests, but believe me, like more than a half of this was like, oh, I don't like the new portal, get rid of it, right? So, sorry, we won't do that. We are working on getting rid of old one. We are almost there. Like recently, Active Directory is on the new portal, and I think we have a few more services that moving there, so the old is gonna die. All right, so thank you for coming for my session in the early morning, and if you have any questions, I will be at the experts lounge for like an hour after my session, and find me there, and let's stay in touch. Thank you.